We teach people how humans connect. We don't tell you what to say. We don't give you scripts. We teach you how the brain connects with another brain and how we can use body language, tone, inflection of voice to create that relationship. And then you'll be the smartest person in the room, and you'll have workers who want to be loyal to you that'll walk through fire for you. And now you have the best of both worlds.
Welcome to Conversations at Basecamp, the professional development podcast designed to help you confidently ascend the corporate climb. I'm Kim Havens.
And I'm Noah Reese, and we're the co-founders of Kahila, a digital platform providing leadership development for people on the rise.
This podcast is your exclusive look into our Basecamp for intentional career growth.
Each week, we'll dive into essential topics to master high-impact power skills, and we'll also decode leadership secrets and navigate game-changing trends to future-proof our careers.
So, whether you're a seasoned professional seeking to refine your approach to leadership development, or an ambitious person charting your course, Conversations at Basecamp empowers you with actionable insights and tangible takeaways.
Happy Friday, everyone. And hello, Raphael. How are you?
Hey there, Harriet. I am fantastic. And a big hello to the entire Kahila family on both sides of the platform today.
Yes, indeed. We are together on the women's side of Kahila, on the breaking barrier side of Kahila, and our very special guest today. We have Dr. Anthony Orsini and his business partner, Elizabeth Poré-Christ, and we from the Orsini Way. Welcome, Dr. Orsini. So good to see you.
Thank you. It's great to speak with you again and see you again via Zoom.
Yes, we are connected, and we're excited to be connected to all of the Kahila community. We met Dr. Orsini, and we're so excited about the work that he does, and we know that it will be beneficial to all of us. So let's tell you a little bit about what we're going to do today and who we have with us. Today, we are welcoming Dr. Anthony Orsini and Elizabeth Poré-Christ from the Orsini Way. Dr. Orsini and Liz know that effective and compassionate communication can change an organization's culture, and that building rapport is at the heart of most business matters. The Orsini Way is based on decades of research, personal interviews, and real life experience, and it's been developed by Dr. Orsini, who is a practicing ICU physician. Dr. Orsini has had a 25-year career as an ICU physician, but his relationship with medicine, as is true for so many doctors, began years ago, in his case, as he struggled with a chronic illness as a child. And he draws upon this personal experience and his medical knowledge to provide proven communication techniques that help doctors and corporate professionals quickly, that's what we need to know, quickly build rapport and form trusting relationships with their patients.
Joining him today is Elizabeth Poré-Christ. Liz says that turning tragedy into triumph seems to be a part of her purpose. After a life-changing diagnosis for one of her children at the age of 2, this successful fashion industry professional began volunteering at a local children's hospital. 18 years later, she is the managing director of the Orsini Way. I think we can give a big, warm Kahila welcome to Dr. Anthony Orsini and to Liz Poré-Christ.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. And you know, the thing that ties you two together, is that there was crisis that precipitated your understanding that there had to be a way forward, you know, that would work for building relationships. Can you talk a little bit, Dr. Orsini, about your experience? And we alluded to it, but your experience and what led you to understand the importance of having this immediate rapport established.
Well, thank you. And, you know, so many things that happen to us in life, we don't realize when it's happening that are actually preparing you for something bigger than yourself. And so, as you mentioned, as a child, I had a seizure disorder, which luckily I grew out of by the time I was 12 or 13 years of age. But I spent a lot of time in hospitals. In those days, every time you had a seizure, they put you in a hospital. And I spent a lot of time going in and out of Presbyterian Hospital in Columbia in New York City. And so thinking back at this, this kind of prepared me for what was about to happen. It made my interest in medicine peak. And when I graduated medicine, I decided to choose the field of pediatrics and did a pediatric residency. And maybe that was why I chose pediatrics, because I was a pediatric patient myself. And then when I was a neonatal fellow, which is where what you do in order to become a neonatologist. So after I finished 3 years of residency, I had to do another 3 years learning how to take care of the premature babies. That's when something happened to me that really changed my life forever. And I speak about it in my book. I noticed that even though the physicians who were training me at this very prestigious hospital in Philadelphia, that these physicians who were brilliant and extremely nice people, compassionate people, the nicest people in the world, when it came to having difficult conversations with parents, which unfortunately, as a neonatologist, I have to do frequently, they had no training. They really struggled and they often made things worse. And it was something that I was scared to do. I was totally afraid of, like, how am I supposed to tell somebody when I graduate, you know, that their child is going to die? And so when I turned to them to say, let me see an example, I saw nothing but more people struggling. And that's because we were in this endless circle of people learning from people who didn't know in the first place, who weren't trained. And so that piqued my interest on how do we do this? And it took 10 years of training. I could discuss that later, but 10 years of research and training and interviews before I realized, you know, that communication is an art. And it's something that we often struggle with, whether it is healthcare. I mean, my background is healthcare, and I would venture to say that the conversations that I have are more difficult than any other conversations that people have. But the communication, as I became a student of communication, I realized it's the same communication techniques that build rapport between the doctor and a patient that business people need to build rapport with their team members and their executives. So that really sparked, when looking back on this, being a pediatric patient, becoming a pediatrician, noticing this lack of communication skills brought me where I am today.
It's fascinating, Dr. Orsini, because all of us have been patients at some point, whether when we were children or at some point in our lives. And at that moment, when you're scared, you're unwell if you are in a hospital, and you have to trust that person, and it can be difficult. And as you point out, that same kind of relationship often does exist in business. You know, when there's a lot on the line, when it's a high stakes moment, and high stakes can mean different things for different people, but to establish rapport and trust so that, you know, you let your shoulders relax, you breathe, you know, you listen rather than all the things that happen when you feel the suspicious, right? So you say you took 10 years to develop this way of teaching people how to communicate. If there's one thing that you think people need to know in order to get past that contraction, you know, the tight shoulders, the holding the breath, all the things that happen when you're a little bit scared, what would you say is that one thing that people have to do in order to...
Well, I think that the concept that really centers around the Orsini way is what we call, Liz and I call, and I talk about it in my book, called It's Hard to Fire Your Best Friend. And that's a concept that goes, so if there's one thing that I would tell people that you really need to start out with, that is become a genuine person, be a person who's vulnerable, be a person who's real, and be yourself. Because if you can't do that, you will never establish rapport. Whether you're a business leader who's trying to establish rapport with your team members, or maybe you're just starting out, you're trying to advance, you have to be yourself and be a genuine person with flaws, but also a person who has whose interests beyond the business world or the healthcare world. And I think that's the best advice. And most of the teaching that we do with communication training centers around that concept.
I wanted to camp out for a minute on the idea that, especially for us here in the Caribbean, let's just say in the Caribbean, it takes you maybe 10, 12 years to finish your medical degree and do a specialization. So I'm seeing myself as a professional spending 10 years becoming a doctor. And then Dr. Orsini is saying 10 years becoming an expert at how to communicate as a medical professional. What I want you to talk about is how can we be as intentional about developing the parallel skills that are essential for us to function as professionals, as we also become the best professionals that we can be. Because you might have people on this call who are in the financial services industry or insurance and so on, and they're thinking, you know, I spend lots of time developing my technical competence. How do I carve out the time also as I'm doing that to also build a skill that is as critical, we'll talk about that during this call, is as critical as my ability to communicate well and build rapport? Do I have to, you know, do 10 more years on that as well?
Well, hopefully you won't have to do 10 years because you have the Orsini way that's helping you, learn that quickly. And I'll let Liz comment. But first I would say, you have to understand that it is not enough to be the smartest person in the room. And the biggest problem that companies and organizations have is that they continuously promote the smartest person in the room. It's important to be smart and it's important to be good at what you do, but it's just as important to learn how to build relationships and establish trust. Stephen Covey in his book, Power of Trust, talks about banking trust. And you bank trust by forming relationships, and you will not be someone who's promoted, and you will not be a leader who creates loyalty if you don't know how to establish that trust and become a real person and learn how to communicate. So yes, learn your technical stuff that you need to learn and study and make sure you're the best at what you do, but become a student of communication. And that's what we do at the Orsini Way, is we teach people how humans connect. We don't tell you what to say. We don't give you scripts. We teach you how the brain connects with another brain and how we can use body language, tone, inflection of voice to create that relationship. And then you'll be the smartest person in the room, and you'll have workers who want to be loyal to you that'll walk through fire for you. And now you have the best of both worlds.
I would like to add that I think that for me, a lot of people always ask me how the trajectory of my career kind of took place. How did I go from the fashion industry into healthcare? What might have seemed seamless certainly, of course, was not. So, you know, as a teenager, I worked retail jobs folding T-shirts. Then right out of college, went into a training program in retail and had a really wonderful career as a designer in production and sales. And all along the way, always learned that any situation I was in, any conversation I was having, there was always some kind of common ground. When I was a volunteer at the Children's Hospital after my daughter was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, I really didn't know anything about healthcare. I certainly didn't know anything about the world of sick children, but I knew a little bit about sales. I knew what customer service skills were. I knew that putting my best foot forward all the time in whatever situation I was in was a good start. I might not have had all the core competencies needed for that specific moment, but I certainly could listen and talk less and listen more and learn what I needed to learn to get me through that next step. And that's kind of what happened and how I landed at the Orsini Way. I was so inspired by the interdisciplinary communication that happened between patients and their physicians and that trust that needed to be built, that when I was introduced to Dr. Orsini, I actually begged to be a volunteer for him because I thought the program was amazing. And when the company needed the managing director, or at that time I came on as the director of programming, Dr. Orsini was like, oh, do you want to leave your really great, fun, shallow fashion industry job and come work in a nonprofit in healthcare? I was like, yeah.
I didn't say that.
That's my
I didn't say shallow.
Well, to me, I went from this super shallow job to this super heavy job. And for me, it's been such an amazing transition. And a lot of the skills that I had doing that silly job of helping people buy T-shirts in a store, you know, really transition to how I have difficult conversations with physicians when talking about their communication skills. So there's always something to bring with you that will give you the confidence to take that next step.
You know, I was working with a group of people the other day on a project that was time sensitive. And what stood in the way of comfort in getting to success was poor communication. At every turn, one person didn't understand what the other person was saying. People who speak clearly were not able to communicate what was important, what was time sensitive, like very, very basic things that we take for granted. But in moments that are tense, we often find the communication system kind of falls apart. And I'm wondering, how can you get past that? Because what happens is frustration, finger pointing. I can't believe that person is so dot, dot, dot. You know, why does it happen? And how do you mend it, get past that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think that happens very frequently. Projects fall apart all the time because of lack of communication. Mm-hmm. The first mistake we make is that we think that the word communication and the word information are synonymous, and they're not. Information is something I can hand on a piece of paper or write an email. That's information. Communication is two humans connecting and understanding each other. And so once you become a student, and that's what we do with the Orsini Way, once you become a student of how humans connect, now I can learn to be able to use my nonverbal skills, my non-word skills, my body language, my tone, my inflection, so I can use that proactively. But even more importantly, I can look at you, and now that I understand the complex part of body language, I can look at you and listen to your tone inflection, and it'll tell me whether you're understanding me or not. Mm-hmm. Because I can look into your eyes and I can look at your body language. And so I may say something to you or give you instructions or telling you what I'm doing, and you may have no clue what I said or totally misunderstood me. If I became a student of watching your eyes, watching what you do, then I can say, okay, did you understand that, or would you like me to do it again? You know, and so I do that in my job all the time when I'm speaking to a parent about a complex medical diagnosis about their child. It's, as you can imagine, it's a very tenseful situation. It's really important that they understand. And so what I'm doing is looking at them and trying to understand whether they're getting it. Neuroscientists say that our brain makes 3 million assessments per second on someone's body language, per second. That's outstanding. That's crazy. So if you become a student of learning how to read that, and it's not that hard, you'll have that communication breakdown much less.
Now I'm going to throw a little wrench into that, and which is a lot of times the communication is not even Zoom to Zoom. It's a text. It's an email. It's written. And written communication, some people are good at that. Some people are not. Inflection is hard to read. What do you say about that, Dr. Orsini? How do you understand? Because in this particular situation, what ended up happening is I recommended pick up the phone so that you can hear.
Absolutely.
Because we couldn't figure out what people were trying to, the points they were trying to get across in the written communication.
I agree with that 100%. This happens all the time. You're going back and forth with text messages. You're going back. Pick up the phone. Now I can hear your tone. I can hear your inflection. We can communicate. We can connect. I think especially the younger generation who's grown up with text messaging, we rely on that much more. You know, my wife works, she's a leader, and a lot of times she'll tell people communication's breaking down because of your reluctance to pick the phone up. So I agree with you totally. You can avoid a lot of this by picking the phone up, doing a Zoom call. A remote call is so much better because now I can read your face. I can understand you more often. And it's a chance for us to connect on a human-to-human basis. As far as the emails are concerned, read your email carefully. The name of my book is It's All in the Delivery, right? Like, how did I word that? Don't just write it real quickly. Look at it. Okay, did that come off a little abrupt? You know, how could I word this differently? But 100%. If things are not going well, pick up the phone or get on a Zoom call.
I would say, and don't assume tone when you read a text or an email. I just recently had this with my daughter. I have two 22-year-olds who just graduated college and are interviewing for jobs. And there's a lot of communication and a lot of things going around. And my daughter came to me and said, I can't believe this person is so rude in this email. And I said, well, why don't you read it to me? So she read it to me and I said, okay, why don't you read it to me without the attitude and try and be as neutral as possible when you read it and see if it still comes off the same way. And then she read it again and she was like, oh, I said, you went into it assuming that you knew what the tone was. And from an email and a text, you cannot assume tone.
So the other thing I would add to that, I'm sorry to interrupt. The other thing I would add to that is during conflict, So it is so much easier for someone to say no to you by email than it is to your face or to your voice. And, you know, I recently had a dispute with a company that they were saying, we can't help you, we can't help you. And all I did was email the manager and say, hey, can I stop by so we can just talk about this? 5 minutes, we were best friends and everything worked out. So remember, if things aren't going well, say, hey, can we get on a call or can we go to Zoom?
Yeah.
It's hard to say no to your best friend, right? So, so I'm a medical doctor. I'm about to walk into the room, see a patient for the very first time. I am a sales professional walking into a boardroom to make a presentation. I'm nervous about it. The board is looking very ominous. Not sure how they're going to receive me. I'm an employee walking in to see my supervisor or manager about a performance review, or maybe to have that difficult conversation about a salary increase. How do I, in 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds, immediately connect and build the rapport that's necessary for that presentation to go well, for my performance review to go as well as it can go? Guide us.
In a very short period of time, I would explain is the first important thing is to build rapport. We talked about it before about being genuine. So don't walk into that room as the leader. Don't walk into the room as the physician. Don't walk into the room as the employee who's giving a presentation. Walk into the room as Tony or Liz from New Jersey, who has a big smile on their face and has just knows how to, because there's different ways of smiling, there's body language. You want to show your body language, not that you're tense, but that use your body language to show that not only are you happy to be here, but you're very confident, but you're confident and vulnerable at the same time, if that makes sense, that you're walking in as a person, a friend, and don't get right to business. You know, a couple sentences, I tell doctors this all the time, don't walk into a room and say, so what brings you here? Or why are you here to see me? That's a huge mistake, right? Walk into the room and say, hey, I've had a rough day today, or boy, it's been really busy, or did you see the Yankee game last night, or something like that. Sit down, guess what? Now you're best friends, and now you can present. You know, each circumstance is different. If you're looking for a raise, et cetera, it's important to walk in as somebody who's already established trust and somebody who's very comfortable and someone who is a real person. And I can't stress that enough. I think this all business stuff will hurt you every time. Brene Brown speaks about vulnerability, and I think she really makes a lot of great points. Be a person who knows what they're doing, but is also just a great person who's a genuine guy who has a life outside here, and you'll do just fine.
So Liz, I want to pick up on Raphael's question and go a little deeper. What if you are shy? What if you are a person who, you know, you might be ready. We're going to assume you're ready. You've done your homework. You're walking into the room confident about your presentation, but like you walk in and it's like, oh my God, look at all those people. And suddenly that confidence kind of diminishes because something in your head and in your heart even clicks into that shy part of you. What can you do in that moment? Because even people who don't think they're shy can sometimes get those butterflies and all the preparation feels like it went out the window. What do you do then?
So, you know, I don't consider myself a very shy person. One of my kids is extremely shy. And I think the first thing I would say is take your pulse, take your own pulse before you walk in the room. Stop, take a breath, kind of come up a little bit with what your plan is. And listen, plans go astray all the time, but you go in and you say, I deserve to be here. I belong here. There's a reason I'm here. And if something comes up, I can handle it. I know what to do. And by establishing a rapport with whatever audience is in front of you, you will be able to get through it, even if it's difficult. I had a situation one time at a job where I'd worked with this person at another company. We were not compatible. We just weren't. And then she then became my boss at another company. And I knew that first review together was going to be really rough. And I sat in front of her and I listened to the review. And there was a lot of old attitudes and opinions from my previous job that had no valid basis in this performance review. And instead of instantly, now I'm a Brooklyn girl, got my Dukes up all the time, that's just my nature, I'm ready to go. I said, you know what? I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to sit here and listen. I'm going to talk less, listen more. And I'm going to understand that this is her perception. Mm-hmm. And to someone else, that perception is their reality. It's not my reality. I don't think it is reality, but it's their reality. So how I handled that performance review was I said, I understand that you feel this way. And I'd like to have a conversation with you about how we can change that going forward. I don't know if it's going to be successful, but I'd like to start over. Always understand you're the director and you get to reset the room, however that may be. And if things aren't going your way, take a second and reset and you'll get to where you need to be.
I love that. I just want to add one thing that I will often share wisdom from my mother, who is 93 years old and the gem of my life. But she told me from a young age, notice the bright lights in the room. And so back to that original question that I had, what happens when you're shy and you walk in? If you notice, who's the person smiling at you? Who is the person in that room who looks like, I can't wait to hear what you have to say? There's always at least one, you know, and that's the bright light. And if you make eye contact with that person and smile, you talk about smiling a lot, Dr. Orsini, it can be disarming in the loveliest of ways. Marielle asks, how do you gain trust when it is lost through a misunderstanding? Regaining trust is really tough. How do you do that?
The most important thing is you have to have that conversation. Liz mentioned that just before, right? So now it was a misunderstanding. You know, I read something, I think it was in Harvard Business Review that, and we published it on the Orsini Way, 72% of business leaders avoid difficult situations by not having the conversation at all. Mm-hmm. And so I think as human beings, no one likes to have that difficult conversation. So if you've lost trust, first be prepared, have that difficult conversation and let's talk about it. And then most people by nature are good people and they will give you a second chance. I think really that's what I have found, but you have to clear the room and you have to have that discussion. And that's why it's so important. I was going to build on what Liz said before. It's so important that when you walk into a room to have a difficult conversation, that you're feeling confident. And you're not going to feel confident if you don't know what you're doing, right? So Derek Jeter feels very confident going up against a major league pitcher, but I don't. So, you know, so, and I use a lot of sports analogies. But once you have understand the way, you know, how humans communicate, you understand how to navigate conflicts resolution. We get our students come back to us all the time. So now you're getting ready to give that presentation and you take your pulse outside the door. You remember everything you have. And like Liz says, now you're the director in the room. And believe it or not, I'm a shy person, or at least I was. And I've had to work towards this. But now you're like, I'm putting my game face on. And I'm going into that room. There was another statistic that I saw, 85% of keynote speakers, you know, the big speakers that talk in front of thousands of people, identify themselves as introverts. That's astounding that they're able to do that. But so you can, once you feel trained, once you're like, I'm ready for major league pitching and I have all the skills, then you can say, okay, take your pulse. Here we go. I'm on. And then you have that conversation.
Dr. Orsini, I want to throw this one back out to you, and maybe Liz, you can chime in on it as well. So I prime myself. I'm outside the room. I've checked my pulse. I'm well prepared. Confidence is feeling pretty high. There's a temptation for us to open that door and to get into our heads. Because of that, we can actually disengage from the room we need to influence. Because we go into it and we're like, okay, I have my script. I know what I'm supposed to say. I'm not looking at faces because somebody's going to discourage me. I'm not getting caught up in what's happening in there. I'm just going to deliver. How do we keep our own pulse while still also checking the pulse of the room so that we can build rapport? Because if we don't keep the pulse of that audience, it's literally impossible for us to see, oh, you're wearing a necklace that's very similar to one that my mother or my grandmother used to wear. I'm not seeing that because in my head, I'm like, okay, it's 90%. Okay, here are my cost of goods sold. Here's this. I'm in that zone. So how do I keep both pulses at the same time?
I would say ask a question to engage your audience. if you're not getting that feedback that's giving you something to work from, start asking questions, start inviting the audience to participate in your presentation, in whatever the conversation is. It will help everyone get engaged, and it'll help give you, by observing what's going on around you, even though you might be nervous, you can see, oh, that person looks really worried, or that person's looking at their phone, or like there's ways to draw people into your conversation, whether they want to get there or not. And I just want to address one thing about the question of how do you gain trust through when there's a misunderstanding. Don't be afraid to apologize about the misunderstanding. You're not saying you're wrong. You're just saying you're sorry that there was a misunderstanding. It will disarm the room. And then it helps you move forward. You're not admitting fault. If you did something wrong, you should. But if you didn't, by just saying, I'm really sorry, we got off on the wrong foot, let's try that again. It'll help disarm the room.
And by the way, I love the necklace example that you just gave. That is exactly how to build rapport. That's a master class in that, because what you did by saying, my mother has that same necklace, or I have that same necklace, what did you do? You shared personal information. That person that you didn't say, where'd you get the necklace, which is okay. But what you did is you related that, okay, now he is just like me. We're best friends. And bingo, you are home free, my friend. And now what everything you say, that person's going to love you, because you're not the person giving the presentation. You're the person, wow, he's got a mother who's got the same necklace. I love that. It's a great example.
Okay, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into this one, if we can say that.
Go for it, Aria.
So I loved it when Raphael said it, but what about the person who says it in a way that doesn't really feel genuine? So it feels like brown nosing, like, oh, I love your necklace. It reminds me of my, you know, like that, when people are kind of trying too hard, and then it backfires like crazy. So how can you avoid that?
So that does sound like, as they say, brown nosing, right? That could be really bad. You're giving your boss all these compliments and your boss is going, please. But what Raphael did is he didn't say that's a beautiful necklace. What did he say? I think he said, I have a necklace just like that, or my mother has a necklace just like that. And
his
guess what?
Great.
They
his
have.
Great.
Yeah. So through the room, sometimes, you know, you got to be careful, but sometimes it's appropriate to use a little humor, some, self-deprecation, things like that. But yeah, if you could find something in common, and we do these exercises at the Orsini Way all the time, we're like, we'll flash up a slide of a room of people and give it to you for 3 seconds, and then say to the audience, what was it about that room that you could find that you can relate to? I have the same shoes, or, oh, those are running shoes. Are you a runner? Things like this, you know, I'm a big runner. I love this. Or I used to run until I hurt my knees. Guess what? You just become someone's best friend. So that's my advice.
I love that. Here's a comment that came. Joseph says, it sounds like you're saying do crowd work. And all crowd work is just another way to have a conversation with the audience, which, you know, whatever your audience is, if it's a big group, if it's just the folks on a Zoom or, you know, in a conference room. I do think sometimes, especially if there's a leader in a room, and, you know, here's the important person is there and you're there. And a lot of our Kahila community are people in the middle. So there are people above them, people laterally, and people below. A lot of times people naturally kind of look for the approval and attention of the leader, to the exception of everybody else in the room. How do you implement the Orsini way, recognize other folks in the room as you work to gain the attention of whoever you think is the important person for you?
I think that the leader is not necessarily the most important person in the room, right? So you can find, let's say you're in a room of 12 and there's a leader. And after you introduce yourself and say hi to the leader and become a real person to that leader, in my experience, is the leader really wants to see how you interact with the other people in the room too. And so by turning over and finding something in common with someone else there and then having a conversation with them, you as the leader, what are you going to start to think? Like, not only is she really, you know, pleasant to me, but here's a person who's a people person. Now there's two people in the room that she connected with. There's three people. And guess what you just did? You built trust, and you banked trust, as they say. So now if your presentation is not 100%, but it's 90%, you're already well-liked. So you got yourself a cushion there just by, you know, doing that. And I push back a little bit about the group or the crowd control that the question asked. A crowd is nothing but a bunch of individuals. And so work them one at a time, and you don't have to work all 20 or 30 of them. All you got to do is connect, and the other people will see how you connect with Liz or how you connect with somebody else. And they're like, you know what? I like her. You know, she connected with that person. She was joking. She was a little self-deprecating. She was, and it works. You'll win the whole crowd.
So Liz, very recently, I had a presentation. I walked into the room, and the room is full of a group of employees. And just before the session is about to start, the last employee walks in. As soon as he comes through the door, he says, I hate it here. I don't know why I am here. I don't know why I'm in this session. And then he says, the worst decision I ever made was to return to this company 7 years ago after I had left.
Wow.
And he drops his things on the table, and he sits down and he folds his arms.
Ooh. Okay. We get that a lot with doctors that
what do you do, Liz? What do you do, Dr. Tony?
We get that. So I would start with what I said before. I'm really sorry that you seem like you're having a bad day. What I'm hearing you say is you're really unhappy. Please have a seat. Let's see if we can make the next hour feel better. You're not going to change their life in that moment, right? But you can, you know, how do you eat the elephant one bite at a time, right? You have to take a small piece of that moment and see if you can try and turn it around. And turn it around, like Tony said, by being a genuine person, I'm sorry that you're having a bad day. I once had a job that I was really unhappy, and I know how terrible that feels. And, you know, just kind of try and build that rapport, even if someone's super grouchy. Dr. Rossini and I have had situations where doctors were kind of encouraged by their superiors to go through some remediation training to correct some unpleasant parts of their behavior, and they really didn't want to be there. So I usually wind up having to onboard them into our program, and I know right from the start they don't want to be there. And that's exactly how I try and disarm them. The next hour is about how to help you. We're here for you. We're trying to do things that will make you more successful in the future. And if you just give us a little bit of your trust and your time, maybe we can get through the next hour, you know, unscathed. By acknowledging and not dismissing their pain, you can kind of try and find some kind of common ground.
We get that a lot when we give workshops at hospitals, and the nurses and the doctors are told that they have to be there, or even in the business world. And I will joke with them, like, a lot of you are sitting here and, you know, we're going to be going over body language today. And I'm looking at every single one of you, and I'm making conclusions about your own body language. And I promise you that if history repeats itself, all those of you who are crossing your arms and looking up by the end of this conversation and by the end of this presentation, you're going to be saying, wow, that was really great. And so you just call them right out on it. And then you see everybody with their arms folded, unfold their arms. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So look, Marielle has a comeback question about this losing trust based on a misunderstanding. She says, but I've seen where the person has lost that trust and will not have that meeting because they are set in their mind that they cannot trust you again. Are there any actions versus that clear the room meeting that you can take if, you know, nope, I don't trust you anymore and I'm not going to?
Listen, communication is through two people. And if one person does not want to communicate, it's very, very difficult. You have to have that conversation. It would sadden me that someone doesn't want to have that conversation, because if you are a leader and you're refusing to have a conversation with your employee, it's probably not because you've lost the trust. It's probably because you don't want to have the conversation. And if you're an employee that doesn't want to have that conversation, it's probably the same way. So yeah, it is difficult when they won't sit down and have that conversation. But over the course of time, through your actions is the only way out at that point, is to see if you can start establishing trust. And then later on, come back and say, hey, I know things were difficult before. Do you mind if we have that conversation now? I really would like to, you know, clear the air between us. And so sometimes they just need some time.
We use a technique called painting somebody into a corner. And I think this could apply a little bit here, where you could say, you know, listen, we're expected to work together in a productive manner. And I know you wouldn't want to do anything to stop that progress from happening. So maybe we could try and get on the same page. What are they going to say? No, I don't want progress to happen. You stay over there and I'm going to stay over here. Like, it just doesn't work. So by painting
a great technique
corner, it really kind of helps get you out of those sticky situations.
Thanks so much for that. Dr. Tony, here's an interesting question I want to throw out to you. You mentioned self-deprecation. One of our attendees asks, when, in your opinion, do you think this is appropriate? Generally, it seems like it would not be a good thing to do, especially as a woman.
You want to talk about little things, you know, like I got a sunburn or, you know, these situations are tough for me. But yeah, it's really just humor. A better word for this is humility. Mm-hmm. And really self-deprecation. It's really just the humility of being a terrible, you know, gee, today I almost went, I was in such a rush today, I almost put on two different shoes. You know, things like that, that you're not really showing your boss that you're incompetent. Of course, don't do that. These are more just like little things that show, you know, because we've all been there before, right? We've all rushed out and go, oh my goodness, I got two different sneakers on, or I almost put two different socks on. So things like that. So yes, I agree with your person who asked the question. Do you want to be really careful, especially if you are a woman and you're a minority and you're trying to climb the ladder, et cetera. But really, it will make you endearing to other people, especially if you're a leader. No one wants to have a leader who thinks he or she is perfect because they all know they're not. You know, I joke, you know, I just yesterday I was in a meeting and they sent me a piece of paper to review. And I said, you know, during the meeting, I said, can you send me that by email? Because my ADD made me lose that paper like three minutes after you gave it to me. Right. So everybody laughs and now you become a real person. So
those are excellent examples.
Excellent. I think,
you know, look, illustrating points makes all the difference in the world. Then we don't have to wonder what you mean. So those were a lot of lessons in there. Amanda has shared something that I want to address. She says the arm crossing always throws me off. She says, I'm always cold and constantly cross my arms to warm my fingers. But you know how, so you may be doing something one way, but people know when you got those arms crossed tight, that often means you're defensive, you're not listening. How can you evaluate what your ways of being are so that you can know, am I sending the message that I want to send? Physically.
That's a great question because I'm always cold too. And I have a natural, it's just comfortable for me to be like this. But again, you have an opportunity to become a real person. If you're crossing your arms, if you're having a conversation, your arms are crossed because you're cold, just, you know, call out the elephant in the room and say, hey, I'm sorry. I'm standing like this because I'm always cold. I mean, this is why I have to get out of the Northeast and move down to Florida or something like that. Bingo. You just became a real person. So call it out. Yeah, people have different body postures and those experts in body language will tell you their generalities and they're not 100%. So yeah, we hear crossing your legs is this, you know, this is an open stance, this is a closed stance, but really, so be careful when you're interpreting them, but there's an opportunity for you to become a real person right there and just say, hey, my arms are crossed because I'm cold and I'm always cold.
Verbal and nonverbal language kind of have to combine and coordinate or else people get confused. So if you're having a conversation with someone and they're staring at your arms, that's the perfect time to say, oh, it might look like I'm angry. I'm just always cold and I always keep my arms crossed. And then problem, you know, mystery solved.
Well, and I just want to add, so that is a very good example of, you know, how it looks being different from what you meant by it. There are also times, and this just happened the other day, tense situation, someone comes on Zoom, is not happy about what is going on in the meeting, and tight lips, tight face, you know, one of four people is not having it, but doesn't say anything and says everything and doesn't realize it. So I was in the position of leadership here. And afterward, I shared, do you realize how you looked in that meeting? Because everybody got uncomfortable because of the expression you had on your face. And she didn't realize it because I graciously but clearly called her on it. She apologized and said, I have to work on that. There are lots of people who say, you know, I don't know how to make a poker face. I don't know how to smile if I don't feel like smiling. But, you know, in the real world, you know, you talk about being a person also to be professional sometimes means you have to suck it up and not scowl, even if you feel like that's what you want to do. So how do you work on that if you're the person who doesn't know how to mask emotions a little bit?
Oh, that's exactly right. That's what we do with the Orsini Way, or one of my opening statements is that we teach people how humans connect. And, you know, we joke when I do my keynotes and my lectures to business world, I start out by saying, none of you in this room are ever going to think about communication the same way. That I will be in your head for the good and the bad. We get emails all the time, like, I hate you, Dr. Orsini, because I'm constantly worried about what I'm doing with my hands. And the greeter at Walmart now just, he never bugged me before, but now I notice this guy's got a tone to his voice. And I'm much more sensitive about that. And I go, that's exactly what I want to do. It's just, become a student of how humans connect. And listen, I naturally like to sit down, relax. They call it in the long position. It's just my back feels better when I do that. And so when I'll catch myself in an important meeting, maybe starting to lean back, and then I have to say, you know, that's not a message that I want to send. And so then I change my body language. So you have to become a student, and you can do it pretty quickly and then master it. It takes time to master it, but the basics you can learn very quickly.
My husband very sarcastically refers to me as poker face because he said, I have absolutely no ability to hide what I'm thinking or feeling. And Dr. Orsini and I have had a go around once or twice where he's been like, can you change your face? Like the resting bitch face here is real. So you have to be receptive to that feedback that you are giving off a tone you don't mean to. And I think if you're one of those people that has that kind of face, you know, when you're on a meeting, take a look at your face, take a look and see how is that what you're thinking and feeling portrayed in the visual that someone else is getting. And if you are the person that has to have a conversation with someone that has that problem, you can really disarm it by saying, I am sure that's not what your intention was, but the way it appeared to everyone on that call was that you were really upset. And if you are upset, I'd love to speak with you about it. But if you weren't upset, you might have frightened or put off the other people in the room.
So Liz, we've heard this phrase now about 10 times during the course of this call, show up as a real person, be a real person. Being a real person in the moment requires a measure of vulnerability. Whether I'm sharing about something that's personal to me, an experience that I had, I just today had a security company come here. And the first thing the guy says as he's setting things up is, can you tell me what's on the Wi-Fi router? I don't have my glasses and I haven't been able to see well in about 15 years. And I just kind of broke down laughing. But maybe for someone, the fact that their vision is deteriorating is something they don't want to share. How do we overcome what can feel like unnecessary vulnerability? Letting people into spaces that perhaps we are not the most comfortable with. Yes, we want to be lighthearted about it. We want to be funny. We want to be engaging. But how do we balance not feeling comfortable with vulnerability when we still want to appropriately build rapport?
So the way I do that, because very often at work, I'm called upon to share something personal that I am vulnerable about, whether it be a medical diagnosis or some other story. So the way I like to look at that is my vulnerability going to help somebody else either see things differently or become more comfortable with their own? So is my being uncomfortable either going to make somebody else more comfortable or will it serve a productive purpose? And that's kind of how I get through having those difficult conversations. Because when we're training a doctor or talking about having difficult conversations, like that story I just shared with you about a manager that really didn't care for me, that was a perfect example. I had to really be uncomfortable and get comfortable because I knew that was going to be uncomfortable. But I knew if I was vulnerable about that, it would become more productive in the future. It might not be in that moment, but kind of keeping that greater good in mind helped me get through that.
And I would add, you know, the vulnerability part is part of being genuine. The being genuine person is what's going to really take you home. I'll tell you a really quick story because I love to teach through stories. But my mother-in-law was very, very ill in an intensive care unit in New York City. And she's got 4 children, 13 grandchildren, and then all the in-laws. And we're all waiting in the intensive care unit waiting room for the intensive care doctor to speak to us. Well, he had already left for the day before visiting hours, and he was at a different hospital. And we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting. And we were there from 10 a.m. And now it's getting to be close to 6 p.m. And we're still waiting to hear from the doctor. And the nurse is saying, I'm sorry, he's at a different hospital. He's trying to get back here. So by the time 6 p.m. comes, when he walks through the door, we are angry, right? We're ready for a big fight. This man walks into the room with a motorcycle helmet in his hand. And he says, I apologize that I'm so late. The traffic was so bad, I finally just got on my motorcycle and came by motorcycle. Right then and there, he diffused all the anger, because all 20-something of us that were in the room thought, this man drives a motorcycle in New York City? Like, we wanted to know more about that. So he diffused the anger. Now, you could call that vulnerability, but he was a genuine person. Loved the guy. I don't know if he did it on purpose or not, but that's a great example of how being a genuine person just gets you well-liked. 8 hours of waiting was diffused with one sentence.
You know, we could talk more, but our time is up. Dr. Orsini, people are asking about, where can they find information about the Orsini method? Where can they go?
Yeah, so our website is The Orsini Way, thorsiniway.com. And hopefully you'll put that in the show notes for those people who are, don't have a pen and pencil. But you can reach us about that. Liz's email is liz@theorsiniway.com. And yeah, we do everything from individual coaching to keynotes to 1,000 people to little workshops for companies and organizations.
And then we have a podcast that talks about difficult conversations and how to get through them.
We thank you, Dr. Orsini. Liz, thank you for just so much great practical information. We're all going to be more human as a result of this. So, that feels kind of good, that it's okay. It's a good thing to just be human. So thank you all so much. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thanks for having us. All
right. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate you choosing to spend your time with us. If you love this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. If you'd like more information on how we empower professionals mid-climb, visit our website at kahila.com. That's kahilla.com.
And as we say at Kahila, step up into your boldest self, and while you're up there, reach down and help another person up.